Okay.
Recording. All right. This is crossing interview for Crossing Borders, Bridging Generations for Brooklyn Historical Society. It's December 15th, 2011. And this is Becky Amato as the interviewer.
And I'm Harry Schwartzman as the interviewee.
So Harry, can you just tell me a little bit about yourself? Where were you born? What age are you? Things like that, just basic information.
I was born in Roosevelt Hospital in Manhattan, and I am about to be 35.
And so tell me about growing up in Manhattan. Or did you grow up in Manhattan?
I did grow up in Manhattan, and, you know, I don't know what to tell you about it. I mean, I think to many people it seems very exotic and different, but that was what I grew up in, so it seems just normal. I don't know. I mean, I had a very, what I think was a very conventional upbringing.
So talk about it. Describe it.
Well, I was born in Roosevelt Hospital. My parents, not long after that, moved to the Upper East Side of Manhattan. They moved to 83rd and Madison. And I guess I grew up there. Ate the lead paint off the walls. Went to Park Avenue Synagogue Nursery School. I guess the pertinent part of that I've left out is that I didn't speak English till I went to Park Avenue Synagogue Nursery School. I spoke Yiddish with my father and Japanese with my mother. I don't know how I dealt with that as a kid. I was told it wasn't a problem and it worked out fine, but I have no recollection of any problems or anything whatsoever with my language. Or, frankly, any recollection of my childhood prior to nursery school. And I have very few recollections of nursery school, except for, I think we used to have a Shabbat, and I think I remember that, but I'm not even sure I'd actually remember that. It's probably a construct in my mind. But from there, I went on to PS6, the Lily Devereux Blake School, for my elementary school, and then my parents took me out of PS6 in the fifth grade and sent me to Riverdale Country School, which was a prep school, a private school. And from there I went to McGill University and Montreal, and really enjoyed my time there. Tried to stay in Canada, but that didn't quite work out. Went to San Francisco for a bit, and then basically came back to New York. And I lived in Vancouver for a bit too, and then I've came back to New York with my heart set on never leaving. I guess I define myself geographically.
I'd actually like to go back to your parents and speaking different languages.
Mm-hmm.
What did the family speak together?
You know, I mean, when I got older and we would all communicate, it was in English. My brother and I always spoke in English. You know, my parents obviously made a concerted effort to teach us other languages besides English. They stuck to it. And it's a wonderful thing, because now I do speak other languages, and I don't think I have a faculty for languages. In fact, I didn't do well in high school, in my French classes. I learned more French just being in Montreal than I did, in, I guess, 4 years of French study in high school, which was torturous. I grew up speaking Yiddish and Japanese, and a lot of people find that, exotic. And different, and I guess as exotic and different as growing up in New York. But again, to me, it's normal. I mean, that's what I grew up doing. And the fact that I guess I spoke to my mother in Japanese and my father in Yiddish and my brother in Japanese, or in English, sorry, in English, and my friends in English, it's just normal. that it doesn't seem strange to me at all.
How did your parents meet?
My mother had come from Japan in, I think, around 1971 or so. She had been previously married and then came to America, and I mean, as far as I can tell, seemed to be enjoying her life here quite a lot. And met my father on the beach at Fire Island, and my father's opening line was, "Are you Chinese?" And and then they got married eventually. And here I am very quickly after they got married. And yeah, they were older. I mean, both my parents have been older, so I think that the choices that they made for me were very well considered. And you know, a big thing for them.
How much do you know about your mom's life in Japan?
I guess I would imagine as much as anyone would know about your mom's life before they had you. I mean, you know, one of the reasons that my mother taught me Japanese is because I could speak to my relatives, and just communicate with my family. So we would go to Japan a lot, particularly when the yen was, cheap. You know, my mom has lived in New York now for, I guess, almost 40 years, if not actually 40 years. You know, she's still convinced of the superiority of Japan in many things. Certainly the quality of their consumer products. So when we used to go to Japan, we'd come back with boxes of stuff, like clothing, dishes, things like that. But we used to go to Japan every second year or so. And we'd bring back boxes and boxes of things. And so as a kid, I grew up with a lot of Japanese things. And, excuse me, sorry. in New York, at the time, I guess it translated into me having toys that other kids didn't have. And that was very cool. there was Japanese television on cable at the time. And so we would watch that. I was a big fan of a cartoon called Ikkyu-san, which was about a boy monk. Which doesn't sound very exciting now, but did at the time, I guess. Well, he got into all kinds of trouble. And then, in terms of the Yiddish stuff, as a kid, Yiddish is a weird language. It's a murdered language. It doesn't exist like it used to. It's not something that someone my age can find people easily to talk to. My dad taught me Yiddish. He didn't have to. He certainly didn't need it in his day-to-day life, except to speak to his parents. Although maybe they could have spoken English too, I don't know. My dad made an effort to find other young kids who spoke Yiddish, and put together a play group called Gribichik, which is named after a nursery song, Oy von Gribichik. Yiddish song. And so we all used to get together in a basement of a synagogue. And the thing about Yiddish is that it's impossible to extricate Yiddish from Judaism. But of course, my parents, my father, but both my parents are, what you'd call bagels and lox Jews. I mean, not particularly religious people. Certainly Jewish and aware of being Jewish and what have you, but not practicing in any way, except I guess that we spoke Yiddish, but I guess we never saw this religious thing. But anyway, the Privichiks were always in synagogue basements, because where else are you going to have a Yiddish play group, I guess. But the whole point of Privichik was that it was a secular experience. And so I would go to these play groups every Sunday, And I would go to Japanese school every Saturday. And I don't think I had a real weekend ever. for a very short time, possibly in junior high school, but then I started working on the weekends anyway, so. Part of learning language is being educated in it, and or to be good at it. And so, I hated it, and I still probably resent it or something, but it probably was good for me. I hated Japanese school, for instance. I mean, really didn't pay attention. Didn't care, just really resented being there. And now I've lost an opportunity to have learned how to read and write Japanese, which I can't do. Pribichik was not as academically focused, so that was just an opportunity to speak Yiddish, and that was great. But I don't have any regrets about it, to tell you.
Did you make friends in any of these situations?
There's still some people I speak to, or if I see around, I can, I'll say hi to. I was at a wedding recently, and I ran into someone I had gone to Yiddish school with, which was weird. I mean, but again, that happened. I made friends. I mean, Japanese school is tough. I mean, Japanese people are very, they're not open to difference. Being a white-looking kid who speaks Japanese, was not great in a weekend Japanese school. Was really not great in a real Japanese school in Japan, which I would have to go to every, when we would go in the summer sometimes. I really hated that, did not want to do that. Japan's not open society. So that was weird. But, I grew up in New York. And it's like, to me, I had friends who were half black, half white, and friends who spoke, God knows, friends who spoke more languages than I could ever learn. And that was normal to me. The notion of, interracial or bilingual, trilingual, whatever it is not that weird in New York. I mean, there's tons of people who speak Spanish and English and have to survive here, Tons of people who speak Chinese and English. I mean, that's normal. It's not abnormal. It's only when you leave New York that it seems abnormal. Even the other kids that here, they know other people like me. It's not that weird. Yeah. Which is why I love New York. Never gonna leave. Yeah.
Tell me more about Japanese school in Japan.
It's terrible.
I know you said it was terrible, but...
Yeah. You have to wear a uniform. I'm not a uniform guy, so I don't want to do that. Did not want to do that. But I don't think we had to do that, actually. Because we were summer. It was during the summer. Although they don't really get a summer. I mean, it's terrible. I mean, for a kid, it sounds awful. I hate gym. And they're really big with, calisthenics. I hate calisthenics, always have. It's just a miserable experience. And then, this is in the 80s that we go a lot. So Japan was a well-off country, but it wasn't as international as it is now. I haven't been in a while, so actually I don't really know what it's like now. At the time it was, we were in, even if we were in Tokyo, we weren't in downtown Tokyo, but it's still... We were very different, and it was very obvious all the time, and I didn't like that. But I never felt that here, ever. Yeah.
I'm pressing you a little bit with this question. In what ways did you feel different? Did people treat you differently? Did they?
Yeah. I mean, it was, the way that kids treat kids that are different, which I guess I got here, too. I mean, I'm a nerdy dude, but... you get ostracized from social situations, you get picked last. Although, that might have been my terrible physical coordination problems, things like that. It's just like kids talk about you, they don't want to be friends with you, they don't want to play with you, they don't want to hang out with you. And then there's always that kid in your class, and it sucks to be that kid all the time. That's basically it. I mean, you know, in Japan, the conformity is the norm, and it's not here, and or not to the same extent, I guess, that it is in Japan. When you come from a place where non-conformity is the norm, and you go to a place where conformity is the norm, it's very tough for a kid, I think. So, you know, so it just wasn't a pleasant experience. I wouldn't do that to my kids.
Do you know what your brother's and dad's experiences were like then, going to Japan?
Well, my dad wouldn't come for, he would go for like 3 months for a summer vacation, and then my dad would work. I guess it was like the Catskills thing, but international. You know, my parents were all into like immersive experiences, I guess. Like, we went to France. We lived in France for a summer in a country house in Normandy, which is awesome. But of course, my parents then had to enroll us in like a French day camp, I guess, so we'd have the immersive French experience. And of course, like, me and my brother not speaking any French, all these kids in some French day camp, and having to like stick together because we spoke English together and didn't speak any French. But the difference is, in France, like, everyone was pretty nice to us and tried to help and stuff, and that wasn't necessarily the case in Japan. Of course, we made friends. I mean, they're great people there too. But just as a whole, it wasn't as welcoming. And not to say in France, I mean, we had problems too. I mean, it wasn't, you know, I mean, it was weird to have a Japanese mom and two white kids and things like that in France at the time. But again, there wasn't as much of a notice on conformity. You know, you could do whatever you wanted, I guess. And that meant other people could do that too. You know, Japanese schools, I mean, you wear uniforms, you're not allowed, you can wear one kind of backpack, that's it. It's really long, it goes on from like 7:30 to 9, you know, I mean, just crazy, it's terrible. Yeah. So, I mean, I hated that part of going to Japan. My dad, he'd come for a month and, you know, I mean, then we wouldn't be in school. We'd do tourist stuff. And that was good. My brother and I would have to bond, you know? I mean, like, we were the only kids like that. And so we'd hang out with each other a lot, which we don't do anymore. I don't know why. But, yeah.
What was your relationship like in general when you were growing up?
With my brother?
Yeah.
I think it was fine. I mean, we played together a lot. I mean, you know, I mean, you grew up in New York, so a lot of time, I guess, we were probably indoors compared to most kids, I guess. But, you know, he's my little brother. I used to beat him up a lot. And then one day he beat the crap out of me, and we stopped doing that. Stuff we did, we'd go to the schoolyard and play ball, whatever. We used to drag all our stuff down on the street and sell it. Just fun, really fun. And then, you know, just kid stuff. Yeah. I mean, again, very unremarkable child. Which is weird, right? Because, like, and then, like, you know, like, we're bilingual, so that's why we're having this interview. We're bicultural, right? And, we had an article written about us in the New Yorker. There's a book that came out in the 80s called Bringing Up Baby Bilingual. And my family's like a whole chapter in there. And again, it's like all these people are like, it's fascinating. We want to write about this. We want to tell the world about it. And I don't see what the big deal is. I fight with my parents. You know, it's the same thing as everybody else. It's the same thing. I guess there's more languages involved, but it's still the same thing, and it's not, you know, this is a global international world, and there's, like, international people, and, you know, I mean, living biculturally or triculturally or million culturally, whatever it is, that should be the norm. You should be conversant in how to be polite in every culture in the world. If you can do that, you're probably a good person, and, you know, if you get a head start with a couple of them, that's great. So, yeah, again, I just don't see it as a special thing.
When you went to these other places, you mentioned Canada,
mm-hmm.
and San Francisco, Vancouver, I think. You mentioned that you came back to New York and you knew you were going to stay.
Yeah.
Tell me about those other places.
Canada just wouldn't have me. I mean, you're not going to get, I didn't qualify for any sort of special visa or anything. Canada's awesome. I think they've actually figured out the cultural issue. I mean, well, in their like major cities, there's a lot of, they're major cities and there's people from all over the place and stuff. Canada's great. I just I couldn't stay there. I worked there illegally. That's probably gonna get me in trouble. I just couldn't stay. And California is great. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. It's just full of Californians, and they're like the worst people on earth. So take that, California. The reason I came back to New York is for the bagels and lox, I think, more than anything else. I don't know. New York's the greatest place on earth, too. Anyone who's born here knows that. That's not true, because I know people who will refute that despite the fact that they're born in New York, but that's just, they miss something. I don't know. It's a great place. It has nothing to do with my culture or biculturalism or whatever. I mean, I just think that it does, I guess, because New York does have a lot of bicultural people and all, but it's certainly not like, it's just it's just a byproduct of having so many different people in one place, and the reason for that is because New York is, the major industrial cultural center, so everybody comes here anyway. Yeah. I mean, if you go to Paris or London, I'm sure it's the same thing.
Was that your experience in Paris or London?
I've only spent short times in both, so I don't know. I don't know what it's like to live there at all, but I can't imagine. I mean, why wouldn't it be any different? I can't imagine. I mean, maybe it isn't different. But I mean, the reality is it all depends on like your money, right? Like, I grew up well off. I mean, I don't know. Well, I don't know if that has anything to do with it. I don't know what has to do with it. But I guess if you're like poor and black in France, it's not so good. But I guess if you're here, you're poor and black, it's not so good. But I don't think that like the poor and black person is gonna they have no reason to look down on you for being bicultural or whatever. I mean, I think they're exposed to all sorts of people too. So I don't know. I think London and France is the same as New York, I can't imagine. Or Paris. Or whatever. I mean, I'm sure there's quirks. I'm sure the experience of growing up, like, straddling different cultures and different worlds, I guess, would be the same in those places, I think. That's all speculation.
Well, let's go back to something something about then. Canada. You said Canada's great.
Yeah.
It sounds like you felt comfortable with there and wanted to stay if you could have legally. Tell me more about it.
I mean, basically, they feel like East Coast cities. I mean, in Toronto and Montreal. Montreal is a bicultural city. It's French and English. The great thing about Canada is that it's America except with socialized healthcare. So it's I don't think it's any different. It's the 51st state. They just hate to hear that.
How did you decide to go there?
And I went to college there, and I don't know how I ended up going there. I was looking for a different place to go than my peers, I guess. And Canada seemed very exotic and far away, and they spoke French. And it's actually not far away, and it's actually not exotic, and they do speak French. And an 18-year-old drinking age didn't hurt. It was cheaper than SUNY. It's a world-renowned institution. It was a win-win. I highly recommend it for all future generations. If this interview gives anything to future generations, look to Canada for college. It's much cheaper. And there's an 18-year-old drinking age. but I mean, in Canada there's tons of multiracial people. Any city, I mean, that's the whole glory of cities, is that it brings everyone together and we all live on top of each other and eventually going to do each other and eventually going to make kids and eventually those kids are going to grow up and speak different languages or be conversant with Sikh culture and whatever culture they're growing up in. And you know, I guess I was lucky because I grew up with Yiddish culture, which is really New York now. I mean, it's not Vilna, it's not Warsaw, it's New York. So, you know, I guess I kind of had a foot in the culture here, the secret culture. I think it's a metropolitan thing. You know, that's what we're urban. That's what we do. If you live in a house with nothing around you, you're only going to meet people like you. So you're only going to have kids that are like you, and that's that. And it's going to continue on for years and years and years and years and years. It's never going to be like that in New York, in the city. Never. That's why cities are the best. And I don't get hay fever.
Well, have you had experiences outside of cities that made you, that helped you kind of refine this idea?
No.
I've never left a city.
I don't have a driver's license, so it's really hard. And it's not like it's obvious when I walk out of a car, if I'm being chauffeured somewhere, that, you know, like, I'm not a black dude. So it's not like really obvious who this guy is, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just some white dude. I've experienced some anti-Semitism outside cities. I guess I look more Jewish than anything. I don't know. I mean, what do I look?
I
don't really know. I think I look more Jewish than anything else. Other people have told me I look more Asian, but I think they always say that after they know I'm Asian, or half Asian. I think that, yeah, so like, if anything, I've experienced maybe some anti-Semitism, but again, who cares? I don't leave cities. You can't get restaurants. So I did go cross country by bicycle, and I had one bad experience with a dude who turned out to be a New Yorker in Montana. That was about it. I really only had pleasant experiences with the rest of America. It was actually really wonderful. Yeah.
Well, tell me about the anti-Semitism.
Oh, God. You know, people making Jewish jokes or something like that, or, you know, you're cheap like the Jews, and I don't know. You know, who knows how much of that's actual anti-Semitism or just some, like, ingrained stereotypes. I guess that is anti-Semitism, ingrained stereotypes, but, you know, perhaps, I mean, I don't think anyone has ever said anything not, you know, anti-Jewish to me. I've always had the impression I never actually met a Jew. I don't really know what it is. People in New York who I've met who are anti-Semitic, and of course I have, you know, they just seem to be angry people in general. I don't think that, like, the gentleman's agreement style anti-Semitism exists anymore. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know, but I don't think so. I come from pretty benign minorities when it comes to anti-Asianism or Semitism. I mean, you know, I'm not black or Hispanic or something. I mean, I imagine that's worse. That would invite more response from people, I imagine, than I get. I don't really get much responses. I think they just think I'm some hippie or something. but I don't think they're reacting to my ethnicity if I get negative reactions from people. Yeah.
How did your dad's family react to your mom and vice versa?
You have to keep in mind that they're both, like, older when they got married. So I think that both of them, you know, and my mom's side was their second marriage. So I imagine that both of them were just kind of, or the four of them, were relieved that my parents had gotten married and were going to have a kid. I don't know. I know that when my dad married my mom, and then they had me, and then they went to Japan. Among other reasons, I was in a Shinto naming ceremony. Apparently my grandmother, who doesn't, you know, most, my family in Japan doesn't speak English, for the most part, just doesn't speak English. Grandmother told my mom that, like, my dad's was, like, almost Japanese, and that was, like, the highest praise you could think of for a gaijin, for a foreigner, which rankled my dad. It still does, I think. Again, I think, well, I don't know. I mean, I think the human aspect of it, the fact that, you know, their 40-year-old kids were getting married, was more important than who they were getting married to. And that they were going to have kids, I guess. But, I mean, I don't know. Maybe they don't tell me stuff about when they met or that whole process. I don't know what the reality is. I mean, that's all I've been told. Yeah. I think, you know, my American grandmother and grandfather, as I understand it, they like my mom. I mean, but, you know, they're first-generation immigrants. My grandfather was from Russia. I never knew my grandfather. And my grandmother was from Poland. I can't imagine that, like, they ever thought that their son would marry a Asian woman. And I can't believe that my mom's parents ever believed that my mom would marry an American guy. I don't think they had any idea what a Jew is. I don't think that was an issue. I've never heard of, or maybe I have, but I don't remember any stories of anything crazy happening or family blow-ups or anything like that. Yeah. And then, you know, then we came and we were really cute kids, and so everyone loved us. My brother and me, that is. again, there was no problems with the families at all. I mean, we saw my grandmother all the time. Maybe my grandmother and my mother didn't really communicate very much. Because my mother's been here for 40 years, but her English is good. But, and my grandmother's English was okay, too. But maybe they weren't communicating. I don't know. I'm not sure. Yeah. No, but they communicated, actually. Yeah.
Do you remember those interactions when you were in Japan? Your mom and her family and...
Yeah, the weird thing is, by the time I was going to Japan, or from when I can remember, both my grandparents had strokes. So they were hard to understand anyway. I think that it probably was difficult for them to communicate and stuff. I mean, you know, paralyzed or whatever. My grandmother was very nice to me. She would cook for us, I remember that, take us out, took us to Tokyo Disneyland, the only Disneyland I've ever been to. My family never goes to California, but we went to Tokyo Disneyland. I've never been to Florida. Besides the fact that we were in Japan, it was like having a grandmother anywhere else, I imagine. My grandmother here lived in the Bronx. And she lived up on Bainbridge Avenue. So we'd go up to the Bronx. That was very exotic for an Upper East Side kid. We'd get on the Liberty Lines and go up to Grand Concourse. She's probably one of the last remaining whites in her area until it became... And then it went... So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. We'd go up there. There used to be a lot of Jews in the Bronx. We come from a family of Jewish scholars. Although I think all Jews seem to come from families of scholars. and so Bim knew a lot of old people in apartments we cleared out in the Bronx and stuff. But yeah, I don't know.
When did your grandparents come to this country?
In the 20s, I think. Circuitous routes. My grandfather came through Argentina, apparently, and my grandmother came through Canada, actually, Montreal. Apparently my grandfather was here before and then went to Canada, married my grandmother because he had met her somehow in Warsaw, and came back after having married her to America. I think it was much easier for my mom. She just flew here. Actually, my mom wasn't a Japanese. It was a Japanese citizen till very recently. She just became an American citizen, which is weird to me, but was her choice. So I don't really know. She didn't. I think it had to do with inheritance stuff with my dad and stuff more than anything else. But, you know, that's the funny thing is that she lives here, my mom, and my grandmother, too, I guess. They both lived here, lived in America, dealt with American stuff, but also were very much able to create their own little worlds where they didn't have to speak English and could live with people who were, you know, who grew up like they did, you know, and made their own little world here in New York, which is cool to me. I think that's cool.
Does your mom have a network of Japanese
friends? Oh, yeah, yeah. There's all kinds of networks out there. She's in a Japanese chorus that only sings Japanese songs. You could very easily spend your whole life in New York and not speak English. And that's obvious. Whatever language it is you speak. And you can, you know, I mean, except for the fact that I guess she married my dad, my mom wouldn't have had to have spoken English. I think early when she got here, she only spoke Japanese. And I guess, yeah, and so that's, you know. Yeah. I mean, I guess, like, really, though, when I grew up, like, Jewish. That, to me, is, like, how I grew up. I guess it was important to my dad that that be the case. You know, and so, and in New York, on the Upper East Side in New York, PS6 at Riverdale, that was the norm. You know, like tons of kids were Jewish, so that's just what I always felt, I guess.
Yeah. Just as a point of clarification, your mom converted to
Judaism. My mom converted to Judaism, yeah. But see, it's always a weird thing to me because Japanese people don't. Religion in Japan is not the same thing as its religion here. It's different. Like, there's, you know, if you're Japanese, you're Shinto. What is that? No, I don't even think that Japanese people really know, you know, but it's, you know, I don't really know, but it's, you know, what it is the, what is said to be the, ancestral religion of the Japanese people who were descended from the sun god. And, that's Shintoism somewhere. And then there's all sorts of stuff around there I don't understand. You know, so when we would go to Japan as kids, you know, Harry and Daniel Schwartzman would always go to the shrine. We'd always go to the Shinto shrine and pray. But the Japanese are very pragmatic people, you know, and we'd go with my grandmother and she said, pray that we get the washing machine fixed. Or pray that, you know, your uncle gets a job. Or whatever it is, you know. Very pragmatic. It wasn't like pray that your soul gets fixed or something, you know. Get stuff done. And then I guess in Japan there's also Buddhism and Confucianism, but those aren't religions. It's just how you do stuff. It's just the way people understand the world, which I guess is what religion is here. But here we also have deities, which is not to say they don't have deities, but they don't have deities in the same way that we have a monotheistic religion. So we were in both worlds. I mean, I guess we never, I don't know if I ever believed in Judaism's God either. You know, to me it was all the same. And I think my mom may see it that way too. I mean, my mom believes in God, I think. But I don't think she believes that there is... She believes that you can take God as you understand it. And I think that that's a very Japanese way of looking at it. I think my dad is probably more... No, there's a Jewish God, and every other God is wrong. and that's the standard, right? So my mom is Jewish, although it turns out that she had a conservative rabbi do her conversion, which apparently is, according to the law of return in Israel, not good enough for me to qualify as Jewish. Which is a whole nother world. I mean, you know, and then I've been assured by Israelis it's no big deal, and you know, I don't know if there's like another Holocaust here or something. I can run back to Israel and they will accept me. But apparently, I mean, as I understand it, that's not the case, and that's not cool to me. And it only serves to reinforce my belief that New York City is the place to be. I mean, I don't need to go to, I certainly don't want to go to Israel. I don't particularly want to go to Japan either. I like being here.
Could you just talk a little bit more about your relationship to Judaism?
I don't know. I mean, you know, Judaism is a religion. I don't think I have much of a relationship to it.
Let me try to clarify a little bit. I mean, you described yourself as being bagel and lox Jew.
Yes.
But at the same time, I know that you're, you know, you learned Yiddish, and mm-hmm. Jewishness is kind of a part of who you are, and now you've mentioned this experience of maybe not being able to return.
Right.
So it seems complicated. And then your mother, I mean... was converted in a conservative temple, which
right.
was pretty pretty conservative.
Well, I think it was because the rabbi spoke Japanese, and I don't think there's many of those. I think there's probably one guy at the time. Maybe there's three now. But I think that was more because he was Japanese more rather than that he was conservative. Or he wasn't Japanese, but this guy spoke Japanese. I think he spoke Japanese. He was definitely the rabbi at the only synagogue in Tokyo, which was a conservative synagogue. And Yiddish is not a religious language. In fact, the reason it existed was because it was not a religious language, it was the everyday language. You know, that changed with Zionism in Israel. You know, and then 6 million Yiddish speakers were killed at once, basically. So that kind of put the kibosh on Yiddish as the Jewish language. My grandfather, my grandmother, and my father's side were respectively a communist and a socialist, a Bundist. They weren't religious people. But though they did keep kosher, I don't think they ever ate pork. But I think it's more because they had some ingrained... I mean, it wasn't for religious reasons. I think it's just what they were used to. I think my grandfather did eat pork. But I'm not 100% sure about that. I think my dad told me that. Judaism is a cultural, attachment. I feel very strongly about. I speak Yiddish. and that's the major connection. My father made that happen. I believe strongly in bagels. I believe strongly in lox. I believe strongly in Isaac Bashevis singer stories. I identify wholly with the New York Jew paradigm. I like bitching and moaning. I hate being retail. All that kind of stuff. it's what I grew up in. It's what I knew, what I know still. I mean, it's that to me is what Judaism is about. And I think to most people I know, I mean, I'm not friends with many religious people. I don't know if that was a, I mean, I don't think it's a conscious effort on my part, but I think you can be culturally Jewish. And I am. But I'm definitely not religiously Jewish. Yeah.
So I wonder if this is bringing up a shared story, but it's interesting in that context, our experience at High Holidays.
Right. When I got escorted out of the synagogue by the cops. Yes.
So could you talk about that?
Okay.
And the aftermath.
Oh, there's no aftermath. So story is Yom Kippur, right? Yom Kippur. And I was working at the Tenement Museum, and I offered my interviewer, Becky, a ticket to High Holidays. Kol Nidre? Was it Kol Nidre? I think it was Kol Nidre, yeah. Because my family is a member of Park Avenue Synagogue. It's a big synagogue, fancy synagogue. You have to have tickets. To getting in is not very easy on Yom Kippur. If you're Jewish in New York, you're probably aware of this. So my parents gave me tickets, and my brother, Becky, and me went to Park Avenue Synagogue for Kol Nidre. And this is right after September 11th. And there's this backstory that I wasn't aware of at the time, but the rabbi at Park Avenue Synagogue was apparently a conservative, conservative guy. Gave a sermon that falsely accused Arabs in Jersey City of dancing and partying when the World Trade Center went down. That's right, right? I mean, I think, yeah. And I'm not even sure if I remember correctly anymore. Essentially was a racist, baiting sermon that had no business, in my opinion, during a time of repentance. Perhaps in a bad judgment call, I decided to make my feelings known publicly in the main sanctuary of Park Avenue Synagogue during Kol Nidre of, I guess it was 2001, right? It was 2001. And then the cops came and I got tossed. Which is not good. And, but in light of how I feel, I don't think anybody else in that room has very different opinions of God that I did. I mean, or that I do. I mean, this is the one of the major conservative synagogues in New York City. It's fancy as hell. Well, not as hell, I guess. Well, there's no hell in Judaism. But, most of those people are culturally Jewish. They don't wear kippahs. I'm sure many of them don't. Most of them don't keep kosher. Ralph Lauren is a member. I mean, we're solidly assimilated Jews, But Yom Kippur is the big one. That's the one everyone goes to synagogue for. And I got yelled at by some lady for ruining her Yom Kippur. I thought the rabbi ruined my Yom Kippur. Whatever. I don't think that, like, my dad's a lawyer, and he really likes being a lawyer. I mean, he takes it very seriously, and he is eternally impressed by the majesty of the law. And, what does that mean? Well, we were always raised on stories of, now I forget his name. There's George something. It's a Japanese-American guy in California. I think it's George. Maybe it's George Takei that I'm thinking of. Anyway, it was a Japanese-American guy, second generation, American. It was like George Nakamura, something like that. And I guess on the West Coast, they put a curfew on Asians or Japanese people walking the streets after a certain time because they're afraid of the fifth column and what have you. And this guy was walking the streets and got arrested, and I think got the case up to Supreme Court even. But, you know, really stood up for himself. And that was an important story to me. And, you know, it was, there's no reason to be ashamed of who you are. And one of the great things about this country is that you don't need to do that, and that the law does not pertain, or the law is not made to separate people. And that was what I was raised to believe, I guess, and I've always believed that. And one of the, you know, of course, the Holocaust was a terrible thing, and that was something that was very important. You know, growing up, we read a lot about it, heard a lot about it. You know, a lot of my family was killed in it. And that also began with, you know, stories, insinuations, and just untruths that were spread about Jews. And in the same way, so was the detention of Japanese people here, you know, that they were spies and what have you, which was not the case in reality. So to hear that, I guess maybe it did have something to do with who I am. Although I would think that any American should stand up for that. I mean, it's really an American issue more than anything else. I guess that's changing now. you know, I do very, very, very much believe in America. And I very much believe that this is a country where it doesn't matter who you are. And I know that's not always the truth, and that's not always the way things work out, but that's the ideal, and you have to stick to that ideal. If you don't stick to that ideal, then, you know, we don't have an identity. I mean, we are a bunch of people from different places who hate each other, I guess. But that's not the case. I mean, I love everyone. But, when that happened, I did think of that, I guess. And I stood up and got thrown out of the synagogue and escorted out by the cops. That was a real bad decision. I shouldn't have done that. But I was very angry. You were sitting next to me, and I just got super angry. Yeah. I've never actually been that angry ever again. Or before that. I've never been that angry. I can't believe that someone in a position, you know, in a fancy synagogue, I mean, this is not like some idiot on a street corner. You know, I mean, this is not something that you should take lightly. And to say things that implicate people in America, of not being patriotic to America, essentially, when it was not the truth even, it's just ridiculous. I mean, demanded a response. But I probably should have just written a letter. Something I never would have gotten around to.
Even though you've not been as angry as that, do you feel like that kind of ideal of social justice and American, you know, values for diversity and diversity of opinion and diversity of religion, do you think you've had other experiences where you've stood up for that?
No, I don't think so. I mean, not directly. No. No. I've never been. I mean, you don't. That's an ignorance, and I don't try not to hang around ignorant people. I've never experienced really, and even in that case, it wasn't racism directed at me. You know, I've never experienced such direct hate of other people. I've experienced racists. People who say racist things or anti-Semitic things or whatever it is. But it never seems like, or they're not in a position to do anything. But if you're, you know, if you're in a pulpit, it's a different ballgame. You know, look, you're an asshole. You don't like blacks, fine. You know, whatever. When you're an asshole, you can spend the rest of your miserable life not liking blacks, whatever it is. That's fine. Who cares? I mean, you're living your life. But if you're in a position of preaching to people, you know, I mean, ostensibly, if a sermon is like a prescription, right? I mean, you shouldn't be doing that. It's just not right. Yeah. It doesn't matter. It's just, you know, if you're that's a community leader, and that's just not something that should be done. And it's just wrong. The guy was completely wrong. I still believe that. Yeah, I definitely do not. I regret the way I said it, but I don't regret having said it.
How did your parents react to this?
Well, they totally thought I was an idiot at first. But actually, you know, they went and talked to the rabbi. I don't really know what happened there. But they came back deeply unimpressed by the rabbi. And you have to remember that my dad's a pretty conservative guy. Yeah, he voted for Bush. And in fact, the way he votes is whatever's best for Israel, whatever the case, whatever, you know, in quotes. I don't think he necessarily agreed with me. I don't think he thought I did the wrong thing per se. You know, I think he wanted to believe that Arabs were dancing around in Jersey City when the World Trade Center went down. And I think, you know, and I do remember, and I might be wrong about this, but I do remember that that was on the news at the time. Like, people were talking about it as if it had happened, and then it was debunked, something like that. But, you know, I think that basically, you know, once it got debunked, my dad's like, well, that's wrong. It's just not the case, you know, even if he wanted to believe it. And, you know, and I think he, you know, basically, I mean, he was like, you shouldn't have yelled out in the middle of the synagogue. And I was like, yeah. And then they stopped being members of the synagogue, and that was that. I think it was really expensive and not worth it in the end anyway. So we all won.
It sounds to me like you have a pretty close relationship with your parents.
No, actually.
You don't?
No. We don't. We talk, like, not much. That's a different thing. I don't know.
Do you feel comfortable talking about it?
I don't think I know what's going on there anyway. I know that, you know, we don't talk about our feelings or anything like that. It seems like some people's families get real close and they know what's going on in each other's lives, while my family seems to exist trying to keep each other away. Why that is, I don't know. You know, I mean, I don't know. Family stuff. I don't know what it is. But we're not very close. We are close. I mean, I'll give a kidney to anyway, relative. But we don't talk. We talk about dumb things or little things. We don't talk about our feelings. I never talk about my feelings about anything. So I don't know. Maybe it's my dad's older. Like, my parents are both older, right? They'll kill me for saying this. My dad was born in 1934. Mom was born in 1942. And I think they have older values. So, you know, we don't, I think part of that is part, you know, that's part of it. We don't talk about our feelings with each other, things like that. So, but I don't think we're close.
Did you ever talk about mixed heritage at all?
Oh, yeah, we talk about it all the time. Yeah, I mean, we truly believe that we have done the right thing as a family. My brother, I don't know as much, but I think he does too, actually. But, yeah, I mean, again, it's just totally normal. I mean, any problems that we have as a family have nothing to do with our bicultural or bilingual reality. They are just other problems with our personalities or what have you. But they have nothing, and I'm very certain of this, have nothing to do with our cultural reality. I mean, I think that that's a really rich part of my life, and I'm very happy I have. And I'm happy that my parents were, you know, exposed me to it. And I think it's an important thing to do. Puts me in a weird position because then I have to figure out what I want to teach my kids, what I want to pass on. I don't know. My brother has chosen to try to pass on Japanese just because I think it's going to be tough for him. Tougher than my mom because she prefers to speak Japanese. Both my brother and I prefer to speak English. But he's chosen to try and teach his daughter Japanese. And it's a tough decision. Like, what do you choose? You know, I mean, reality is Japanese is a way better choice because you can actually use it. But then the thing is, like, you know, Yiddish is just like, I mean, even more and more is going to disappear, you know, or become like Latin. You don't want that to happen either. So that's a rough choice. I don't know what to do.
Have you talked about it with anybody?
Not really, no. I could talk about it with my parents, but, you know, I don't have a kid. I don't feel like I'm going to be having a kid anytime soon. So. Nothing to talk. I mean, I guess we're last-minute people anyway. So it's not something I'll discuss till the very last minute. I mean, my brother didn't seem to make that decision till I think, after his kid was born. So, you know, we'll put it off as long as possible. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to probably
sure.
close this down, but I wanted to know if there's anything else you wanted to add about the things we've talked about. I mean, I have other questions, but
I
know,
probably said
we
too
can
much.
Have another conversation
I said
another
too much
time.
Already. I know, you know, I know. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks
okay.
for sharing your thoughts.
No problem. Rolling surface.